What's up, everybody?
What's up, what's up?
Welcome to Neighborly Discourse with Billy and Steve. I'm Billy.
And I'm Steve. What's up, dude?
What's going on, man?
Dude, I was chomping at the bit to get in here today.
That's what I heard.
I was listening to the podcast, our first podcast. I'm so excited about our first podcast that I was just listening to it as I was cleaning the garage, knowing that we're going to come in here and record our second podcast. So I'm so excited. This is so cool.
It is pretty fun.
And I listen, for all my friends who listen, don't be mad at me for texting you, but we need your support. So I, from time to time, am going to send out texts just to make sure that you guys are aware of some highlights that we're doing, like our first podcast or when our website goes live or anything like that. I will let you know about it because it's so important, because we need to get the word out. We believe that in this season that we're a voice that needs to be heard in America. We're just one of many. We're not the voice. By no means are we the voice, but we are one of many that need to be heard in this time period, in this season of American history. That said, guess what?
What?
I made $20. Let me see. Was it 20? I made about $20, $25 in the last course of the last 4 days. Ask me how.
I mean, 25 bucks, okay.
Well, listen, somebody's grass? This is extra. I didn't have to work for this.
Okay.
You should know this answer already, because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
I have no idea. $25?
Yeah.
Probably your garage sale?
Nope.
Then I've got nothing.
My kids.
So, okay. So, for those of you who are wondering, when we talked about it before, we had a podcast that never made it to air. Steve charges his kids for missing doing the dishes. If they want to use a dishwasher, I believe they have to pay for it also.
No. They are the dishwasher. Okay. They cannot use the dishwasher. That's only special occasions for my wife or myself to determine when we use the dishwashers. Dishwasher, excuse me.
And if they miss their time to do it, if you wake up in the morning and grandma's doing the dishes, they got to pay you.
They got to pay.
And Sarah was like, that's it? I'll pay. And she's paying not to do it. It was what our last conversation was.
In fact, let me tell you, yesterday, right? My mom, we talked about this before. My mom is pushing 80. I think she's like 78 or going to be 78.
Yeah.
She's got bad knees. Since she was in her mid-60s, bad knees, right? She still takes care of me. I'm a mama's boy. And every day she asks me, do you want me to cook you something to eat? Now, you guys might look at me and say, look, on Sundays, I take her out. On Sundays, it's eat out. Whatever she wants, I get her, right? But Monday through Saturday, at least 4, maybe 5 times out of the week, if she wants to cook for me, if she's up for it, I'm like, have at it, cook. So yesterday, she actually called me up and said, hey, do you want something to eat? I have some leftovers, I can warm it up, whatever, whatever. I said, sure, make it happen. I said, but you don't have to do it now. We can wait, you know, a couple of hours, 2-3 hours. I'm not in a hurry. Needless to say, it never happened. Why didn't it happen, you asked, Billy? I'm glad you asked that question. Because at some point in that gap, that 2 or 3 hour gap, she came and washed the dishes because someone didn't wash the dishes.
Gotcha.
So she washed the dishes and she was so tired after washing the dishes. Her knees were in so much pain after washing the dishes.
Yeah.
She was like, she called me up later and said, you know, baby, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to cook for you today because my knees are in so much pain. I'm not going to cook for you. Now, you might say, Steve, come on, you're a 50-year-old man, get over it. Your mom doesn't have to cook for you, whatever, yeah. Whatever.
Yes.
But my response to her was, I said, Mom, I have kids to wash the dishes. You know, you are the only one who can cook Haitian food for me, right? Yeah. And I didn't even make it a mandate for you to cook for me. You're the one by your love and affection for me, your motherly love and affection said, hey, can I cook for you? And I'm like, sure. I'm not going to turn down that gourmet meal.
No, nobody turns down
exactly.
Good food.
So, but you got me psyched up. My mouth is watering and salivating because I know you're going to cook for me. And what happened? You went and washed the dishes. You did something for my kids that you have no business doing them. I mean, I'm their parent. You know, they do for me. You know what I'm saying? I do for them. You don't have any business doing anything for them. You got to take care of me, but now I'm going to suffer today and not eat your food because you wash their dishes. I'm not happy about that. That was my response to her.
I mean,
What do you think about that? Am I unreasonable or can you see my point?
No, I can see your point and you're unreasonable. Well, not unreasonable. I can see your point, but you're upset at your kids being helped by your mom because right. It didn't let you get helped by your mom.
Well, listen, first thing, I'm not happy with my kids for not washing the dishes. True. Right? So it's like, I don't like to wake 100%. Up in the morning with dishes in the sink.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not happy about that. Breakfast dishes I can accept because everyone's in a run, but don't come up with a sink full of dishes. That's just terrible, right?
And then don't add to the mountain of dishes in there when it comes to lunch and
exactly.
So on.
Gotcha. You got my point. So that's number one. But number two, indirectly, it affected me because I'm supposed to have, you know, this gourmet, you know, authentic Haitian meal.
Yeah.
And I ended up not getting it because my 78-year-old mom can't cook it because she was on her knees so long washing these ton of dishes. So I gladly took that $5. And I should have charged them, you know, more than $5 because not only did they, the $5 was just was punitive just for not washing the dishes. But they should have been like something exercised on top of that because now I didn't get a meal. So I got.
Well, was it 25 or 5?
Well, no. So Nathan missed dishes. Like there was a Friday where he didn't wash the dishes. And Janice went and knocked on his door and said, "Hey, Nathan, we're going to bed. There's dishes."
Yeah.
And he says, "Mom, I'm too tired. I just paid the $5. So he did that 3 days in a row. I had no problems. And then yesterday, you know? And so I texted Sarah. I said, "Sarah, thank you for contributing to your mom and I, thank you for contributing to our date night, you know, because it's ridiculous." So
now, is there going to be a limit when they realize that $5 is easier than doing it?
I think that if that happens, I'll start using the dishwasher. If that happens, I'm going to start collecting. Let me say this. If they start abusing this and not washing dishes at all, they just come into the week saying, "I'm not going to wash any dishes," then I'm going to say, "Fine. At the beginning of the week, I want my $35. Like, give me my money up front so I can plan for the week how I'm going to spend that money, you know, and then I'll start using the dishwasher and so my mom will not have to wash dishes." So that's where I go with it. But at this point, I want to see what happens. I want to see how far they push this because Nathan paid me $15. Sarah's going to pay me $10. So I just want to see how far they're going to push this.
And has Micah done the dishes or it's not been his turn?
They cycle. So they do it a week at a time.
Okay.
You know? But on another note, I want to throw this out there to you. Because I remember we were talking on one of our podcasts that might never air, where you said how you look back at things. And you said, like, when did this happen?
Yeah.
Right? When did this change? Like, when did I stop asking my parents, "Can I go out?"
Yeah, you know,
I just walked out of the house. When did that happen, right? So an interesting thing happened this weekend. And I noticed this with Nathan. Nathan is by far, I'm closer to Nathan by far than any of my other kids for multiple reasons, not the least of which he's the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
But also, his thought process is very similar to mine. He's politically inclined. He's pensive. He's thoughtful. We're very much alike. And when we talk, it's interesting because I know that there are people who sometimes listen to Nathan and I talk, and I can see in their minds, I can see the questions swirling in their heads like, "These guys are weird, you know, because this is a father and son. Listen to how they talk." But I love talking to Nathan. And this weekend, he was doing a garage sale, and Janice wasn't feeling too well, so I went out to help him. Because we have these Haitian ladies that come by. These guys, they ransack. You'll say a dollar, and they say not 50 cents. You know, you say 50 cents, and they say not 25 cents. So I needed to come out there to make sure that he had some backbone to put a stop to this if it got out of line. But we got into a little discussion, a little heated discussion, and it wasn't major, right? But I was saying things that I wanted, and he was bantering back as if we were buddies. And in my mind, as we're having this conversation, I'm like, "Hold on a second. I'm serious about what I'm saying. Like, I don't want this to happen." We were arguing about whether or not he can. This was 2 weeks in a row he did a garage sale. I'm very fastidious when it comes to my garage, so I gave him mercy by letting him store stuff in my garage, but now I want things gone.
Yeah.
And he wasn't willing to just say, "Okay, Dad, I'm done. This is it." He wanted to extend it longer. He said, in fact, he said very explicitly, "Well, obviously, I can't stop. I have to do the garage sale again next week or in the coming weeks because I didn't sell enough." And I said, "No, it's not obvious to me." You know, yeah. I gave you 2 weeks. your 2 weeks are up, get your stuff out. And so we're going back and forth. And I was really bothered by the fact that he didn't just accept the fact that I'm telling him as his dad, not as his buddy, get your stuff out of my garage. So all day on Saturday, multiple times, I even talked to Janice about it. I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know how to deal with this and how to confront Nathan about it, that I love his friendship. I love his companionship. I love him as a son, but I do not love having to argue with my son. Like, you need to understand that I'm still the dad. And in this scenario, what I'm telling you, I want your stuff out of my garage.
Is it because you're the dad or because you want out of the garage?
Well, I want it out of the garage. Let's start with that. But
was it the fact that he assumed it was going to be left in there?
So let me say it this way. Imagine, Billy, I have stuff in your garage.
And you say, because I have a different thought than you do. At a certain point, a certain age, your parents are not your parents or your friends. So when does that happen?
See, I don't know if I agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I agree 100%. With that. I think that, well, how about this?
Is it when you move out?
I was going to say, yeah. You're still under, as long as...
Because that's what I'm saying. So he's in your house using your garage for his stuff.
Got it.
Like, listen, my house, my rules, that simple.
Right.
If you want to store it, if you want to have a garage sale next week, that's fine. Put all the clothes in your car, in your trunk. Find somewhere else to store it. You can use my garage as a storefront next week, but you're not storing it here until then.
Right. So remember, my issue is not the fact that he wants to have the garage sale. My issue is the fact that I'm telling him what I want, and it's becoming this long, drawn out.
You guys crack me up, and I'm talking to most parents. When you raise kids to be independent, when you raise kids to have a voice, when you raise kids to speak up for themselves, and then they do, well, hold on, but well, not here, though. Like, well, you can't raise a kid to have a backbone, and he wasn't even confronting you. He was just giving you his thoughts. And then get upset that they use what you taught them. That's fun. I see that in my life quite often.
Hold on. So, listen, I'm being rebuked here.
Yeah, 100%. Because I'm with you with, listen, my garage, you know. And again, your garage, I know about your garage.
Right.
Okay, I don't live in your house. Right. I know how you feel about your garage.
Right.
So he should know that.
Right.
It should be, hey, listen, I want to do this for the next month. I want to keep this stuff in here for the 4 weeks, get as much out as I can. Because he knows you and he knows your thoughts on the garage.
Right.
The fact that he assumed, as I think, we're like, hold on a second, I'm your dad. You don't know me?
Right.
I don't allow stuff in my garage.
Listen, have I ever said those words to you? Because I've used those words so many times.
No, but I get it. So that's what I'm saying.
Right.
So it's not really a back and forth. It's more like, yo, this is my house. You know what I'm doing. You know how I am. Why are you questioning it? You've said it before.
So you agree with me that I have a right to be upset, but you're...
Not a right to be upset. Like, listen, how could you assume you're going to leave your crap in my garage? To me, it's just garbage.
Right. So I'm saying you agree with me because that's the position that I took. Like, how
can
you... But now you...
But not on the principle of it. We had a back and forth, and I'm upset that he's having us... We're not buddies. We're not friends. Well, that's different. He lives in your house. Yes. It's your garage, yes, but he's trying to do something. He should communicate a little differently.
So you're saying don't take it personally is what you're saying.
No, you raised him to be that way.
Man, Billy, I just don't believe that you're going to – that what you just cited to me when Liam, like 5 years from now, 6 years from now, when Liam turns of age, that you're going to accept that. I just don't believe that.
Oh, no, I accept it now. I get on him about stuff. He's, what, 12?
Right.
I get on him. You know, and I get told, you know, you're intimidating him, you're in his face. Well, then tell me to stop.
Well, I'm saying, if Liam right now starts pushing back at you, you're going to accept that.
Depends on how he pushes back. If you come at me with attitude, I'm going to come back at you with attitude.
Got it. So, if but you come, listen, if you no
talk,
attitude.
No, if you
attitude.
Talk to me, good job, stand up. Here's what I think we should do. You have a better idea?
But there comes a point where you don't want to talk anymore, where you're done with the conversation.
No, I disagree.
Ah, oh, man, I don't
know. No, because it's a life skill, negotiating. It's also a life skill being told no. It's also a life skill. All right, you said no, but what about this?
But think about what you just said. A life skill negotiating, which I can accept. I love that premise, right? But all negotiations come to an end, right? You can't. There's no perpetual negotiation.
You can have what's called continuous bargaining.
But at some point, if the person you're bargaining with says, "I'm walking with
you," have
a
compromise.
But no, listen. If the person, and this is great, because this has macro implications. But I'm saying, if the person that you're negotiating with walks away from the table, what do you do? You jump over the table?
No, no.
You grab them by the collar and say, "Get back to this table."
No, they lose. What you say? You have nothing else to say to me.
But no, I don't agree with that. No.
Yeah, you hold on. You're a quitter.
Hold on a second.
Quitters don't win.
Let me change it. Hold on. Let me frame this differently.
All right.
I do agree in some micro level, yeah, right, that what you just said is nested in some truth, right? I do agree with that. But I'm saying that not all forums are the same.
No,
right?
They're not.
So there are some forums where you have a greater mandate or greater weight or greater authority on one side of the negotiation block, right?
Okay.
So in that situation, I mean, perfect example, think of a Fortune 500 company, right? Pick anyone. When they negotiate with their employees, at some point in the negotiation process, they have the greater leverage. And if they walk away, they're not losing. They're saying, this is the line that we've drawn, and we're not going any further. And so if you can accept that premise, right, I'm suggesting to you, I'm offering to you that as a parent, we have that greater authority. And what,
no,
which
we
can say,
what I say,
this
goes,
is where we draw the line. But hold on, here's the thing.
Okay.
You just said, what I say goes, right? Which, let's be real, ultimately, that's what we feel, right? What we say goes, right? However, as your relationship develops with your child, you want it to be in a situation where you don't want it to be because I said so. Even though ultimately that's what it is, but you really don't want it to be that way. You want your child to be able to say, you know what? If you feel this way, I'm good.
So tell me, because you had it. My son's 12.
Right.
It really is what I say goes. But I will listen if he forms a logical thought at 12 years old. Your kid's 19, almost 20 years old, I think.
Right.
So answer your own question. Are you okay with the negotiation? Because you're the one saying, no, bro, I'm upset that he talked to me about this.
No, I was okay with the negotiation. I was okay. Well, first of all, I was not happy with the fact that he assumed.
Yeah.
Right? So that the assumption is like, come on. Like you said, don't you know me?
You've
been together
I got you.
All this time? Why are we still bantering? You know, the negotiation needs to stop. You need to come to the place of saying, okay, I'm good. That's all I'm saying.
Well, was there any leeway?
What do you mean?
Did he make any argument to you that you consider, or you just, it's from the second you started, let's say the conversation lasted an hour, did you listen and move on anything other than no, get out of my garage? So if you didn't, you can't call a negotiation.
It's interesting that you just say that, because I want to be intellectually honest, right? And so
you can just be regular honest.
Well, I mean, I want to. What I'm saying is that it's very. Sometimes you ask those questions, and in the moment, you always think that you're right, right?
Yeah,
but you have to back away from it for a second and take a broader view. So, I would be curious to think how Nathan received the end of how, from his perspective, did he think?
Well, what
I
changed?
Was
what did he originally? Is there still stuff in your garage?
That's.
Let me answer the. It's if you said you wanted out and you had it back and forth.
So think,
and hold on.
Okay.
If whatever you said, is the stuff gone? If it's gone, you didn't allow a back and forth. You said no, and it's out. So you didn't really give anything.
So this is it. Now that I think about it, he won the negotiations.
He won. Okay.
He won. And the reason he won the negotiations is because he wanted to. Use my garage because Nathan, he's into art and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he wants to buy the press furniture that he sees on the side of the road at garage sales and fix them back up and sell them and resell them. And he wanted to use my garage. And I was like, Nathan, you know me.
Yeah, that's a little much.
And I said, but not only that, but I'm thinking about taking part of my garage and putting a little home gym in there. So it's not going to work. And he's like, Dad, one piece at a time, I promise, whatever, whatever. So I thought about it. This was a couple of weeks back. And I said, okay, here's the deal. If you pay for my $10 membership at whatever, I'll let you do your business in my garage, one piece at a time. And so he balked at the idea, no way.
Shut it down a different way.
But anyway, I brought that up to him. And then in this negotiation, bantering that we had on Saturday, he threw that back in my face and said, listen, now he never agreed to the terms, right? But now, all of a sudden, because of the whole garage sale thing, he wants to continue the garage sale. He's like, look, I'll pay for your gym membership. You know, I'm already going to do it. You're already going to, like, see me part of your garage so I can do my refurbishing. So what's a couple of extra crates? So that was the argument that he was having.
Okay.
And so the way it ended was like, look, I'm not going to have this conversation with you anymore. I'm done. The next day when I went into the garage, he had reshuffle the shelves in there so that I don't see his crates. And he has his one item that he's refurbishing right now. So basically he was like, look, I was able to make your garage look whole and I'm still going to pay for your gym membership. Can we agree? So that's basically how it ended. We never formalized the deal. Although
I like that.
Okay, go ahead.
I like that he did that. As long as it's not outside the rules of society, you know, push forward, keep pushing. Don't take no all the time.
Right.
So I like that he did that. You know, look, man, I'm telling you, you got the small picture. I'm trying to show you the big picture.
Okay.
Look, your garage is fine and I'm still in here. Okay, cool. Personally, you got to show me. You got to prove to me. You're telling me it's a small thing, one piece at a time. Okay? You're too tired to do the dishes. How are you going to commit to this?
Interesting.
Dishes are 10 minutes at night, wash and put them away. You're too tired to get up, but you're asking to take over my garage. Where you have no conviction. Now, granted, this is something you want to do, but sometimes in life, you got to do what you don't want to do. So if you want to take over my garage, at least part of it, you've got to do the dishes.
So you would tie it. Not only 100%. Would you tie it, but see, here's the thing. That's why.
I do that to Liam now.
But that's why I said you got to pay my gym membership. And that just.
No. Well, paying is one thing. Physically doing, because he's going to be out there physically doing something in your garage, physically taking your space.
Hold on. I want to make
he
sure.
He may get worn
I
out
make sure
from
I
it.
Understand your argument, because I'm not sure I understand your argument. Are you suggesting that I need to put some sort of weight on this to force him to finish the task? I'm just trying to understand. What are you saying?
No, he has to prove to you he's going to finish the task. He's telling you.
But how would he prove it to me?
By doing the dishes. He's telling you, I'm going to get one piece in, one piece out.
Right.
It's going to be a quick thing, whatever.
Right.
Okay, well, you can't even commit to doing the dishes, which is at night taking 10 minutes. Well, you're going to be in the garage in the hot sun doing this for multiple weeks on end? I mean, I'm asking you for 10 minutes in the air conditioning.
Right.
And you're telling me, no, but I'm going to do this other thing. Well, I'm sorry, but you got baby steps. You're trying to run. You haven't even walked or crawled yet. You know what I'm saying? And you're trying to sprint down the street.
That's
and it doesn't work that way.
That's interesting. I gotta let that marinate for a second. Because on the one hand, he can say, hey, I'm paying you. Right? I'm following your guidelines, and you're saying either wash the dishes or pay you, and I'm deciding to pay you.
But you also threw in something else.
Which is?
You're asking for business. Okay, it's his business. You can't just pay your way out of things. Sometimes you have to work. Sometimes you have to do it. You know, money runs out. Well, then what else are you going to do? If you can't pay at the restaurant, you got to do the dishes.
This is interesting. This is fascinating.
I can't think of something off the top of my head. Well, for basketball. So Liam wants to play basketball. I'm not spending $150 for him to go play if he's not outside practicing.
Right.
You want to play basketball? Get out there and practice. Show me you're working towards it. I'm not just giving stuff away for you. You got to earn it. You want to go do this? Like he wants to get, he's playing flag football. I need some cleats. I'll get you cleats. That's a new thing. We're going to do it. He practices outside football with me. I got no questions asked. You want the gloves? You're showing me you're dedicated. I want to play basketball. When's the last time I took a shot? Well, it's hot outside. No. We practice football outside. Same weather. Well, nah, bro. I'm not paying for the gym if you're not out there practicing. Show it to me.
Right.
Okay? That's how I would say it. You've got to prove to me you're going to. If I'm doing something for you, you have to do something for me. And it's not monetary. It's nothing. You have to show me. You have to show me.
I guess hearing, like, having this opportunity to think about it while you were talking, I guess it doesn't mean that much to me. In
what?
Terms of, I think that I'm getting what I want out of the dishes, right? Like, I don't look at this, because he's been washing dishes all his life, right? They all have been. This is a rule in place, like, where we rotate every week since they were, like, 12, maybe even younger. So that's not a big deal. So I can see.
If it's not a big deal, then I'm to charge for it.
Well, I mean, it's not a big deal in the terms of, it's a big deal from the perspective that you got to earn your keep in the house. Yeah. Somehow, you have to contribute to the house. So if you're not going to contribute to the house, for example, mm-hmm. and I told you this a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to hire a housekeeper.
Yeah, and they're going to pay.
And they're going to pay
for it.
Yeah. And I already told Janice, I think Friday, go ahead and look it up. Get us a housekeeper, get a price, get the house priced out, and they're going to pay. All three of them work. And if they're not willing to clean, I'm okay with that. Because when I was living on my own, I had a housekeeper. I had a one-bedroom apartment, and I lived by myself, and I had a house cleaner clean my house every 2 weeks. Why? Because I had no desire to clean my house. So if that's where they're at with that, I'm totally fine with that. I just want to make it clear that I'm building you up to live on your own, because you're not going to have a dirty house. So right now you think that having a dirty house is normal. We're going to change that, because either you're going to put the muscle grease in yourself, or you're going to pay to get it done. And so that's how I feel about doing the dishes. The garage thing is, to me, is totally, it's a separate piece only because that's my sanctuary. You know, like I go through great length to keep my garage looking a certain way. And if I'm going to give that up, I want something in return, the quid pro quo. And so I think that...
So $10 a month is enough?
Well, you know...
Teaching your kids they can pay for anything.
Well, I'm saying that that's a starting point. That's a place where you can start by paying, and then the answer is no, the answer is no, right? But I hear you, I hear you. But listen, I want to change gears real quick because I talked about Free Guy, right? And I told you this a couple of weeks
ago. Oh, yeah, the movie Free Guy. I haven't seen it yet.
I want to give it such rave reviews, right? Because... the guy, what's his name?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, he's a likable guy.
Yeah.
You know, he comes across as not just genuine, but wholesome, right? And I genuinely like the movie. But this ticks me off about Hollywood, and it ticks me off about that elitist group of people. And I know that once I say this, you're going to disagree with me, Billy, but I'm ready to fight. I'm just letting you know that right now.
All right.
This is, so you've seen the previews of the movie. You understand the premise, right? This is a video game world, right?
Yeah.
It's rated.
Like he's a character in a game.
He's a
right?
character yeah. in a game. It's a rated G world, you know, where everyone's playing. No, I take that back. Not rated G. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. It's a video game. And he's this wholesome guy in the video. He's just an extra, you know, the extra characters that you see in the video game. Cool. So you start to like him, whatever. As they get into the plot and you're really into the storyline, out of nowhere, he drops the F-bomb. And where he drops the F-bomb, it's like, you force this profanity. You force this cuss word to come out of your mouth. Right when we were intrigued and buying into everything that was going on, you just punched me in the face. And four times in the movie, four times. So it's my wife, myself, I have my two kids with me, and we're watching this, and every time it happened, I was startled. Like, where? And now, he dropped the F-bomb once, and he dropped the GD three times throughout the movie. Three times. Mm-hmm. And two of the times when it was said, well, all the times it was said was, like, totally inappropriate. Like, where did this come from? Right? But then the characters who actually said it, it was like, oh, my goodness. Again, wholesome characters that for the whole duration of the movie, you saw them as wholesome, and all of a sudden, bam, they threw in the GD. And that ticks me off. And now I know how you feel about profanity. Like you're totally fine with profanity. But I'm telling you that
just words.
There's a time and place. If it was just words, it wouldn't be called profanity. That at some point, society had said, forget about society. I can go further back than that. But there is something called it's called profanity because it's profane. It goes against the natural language. It's offensive, right? And you can say, well, it's not offensive to me. That's not the standard.
True.
And when you start using profanity like that in a setting where it's okay, this is a family movie, I look at Hollywood and I'm saying that they're throwing the middle finger back at the family and saying, this is what we think about family, and we think so little of it, we're going to draw you in and then slap you in the face in the middle of the process.
All right, so I told you I should have seen the movie before you told me about it. You said, no, you don't need to. But I do, because you keep saying wholesome, wholesome. What I understand is the guy is getting his eyes open to a not-so-wholesome world, so he's seeing things change around him, that being one of them. So I don't really know what else happens from there. But, yeah, man, to me it's words. Like, what's the big deal? As a moviegoer, you got to check the rating. What is it? Is it R? Is it PG-13? Is it going to have language in it? You have to know going in.
I was totally thrown off by it. It's a movie that I wish I never spent my money on.
Well, you're thrown off on it. There's right. even times where, yeah, there are songs, there's movies where they force the issue. They force certain words, certain topics, certain scenes. And it's like, I mean, I get what you're going for, but it's a little much. You know, I get it and you kind of move on from it. But... I mean, it's words.
It's more than words. Look, if our society...
But it's not. It's...
No, but it is. What I'm saying to you is that words have meaning. And
I agree with that.
And that's why it's more than words, right? So the difference between I hate you and I love you just is just words, but the meaning behind those words are drastic.
But you got to show me the action.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I tell you this all the time when it comes to like Thanksgiving and stuff like that. I don't comment on anybody's food. If you sit there and listen, holy crap, you think they were having the Last Supper there. Everything is the greatest thing of all time. No one believes what you're saying, because if everything you eat is great, if every outfit looks good, if everything is fantastic, you hold no merit. You just talk.
So you're saying that you have to have the bad so that you can appreciate the good?
Yeah, not the bad appreciate the good. You have to have the action behind it.
Oh, you have to have the action.
Yeah, no. I can say whatever I want. Who cares?
I understand.
Am I proving my point by doing it? That's how I look at it.
I'm saying to you, Billy, there's something about using profanity
that bothers you.
No, without question. But what I'm saying to you is that using profanity as a way of speaking normally, there is a degradation that's happening, not only to yourself, but to the language and even to the people around you, because you're projecting and casting dispersion, unwittingly maybe, most times, in fact. But that's what's happening. And there's consequences for it, whether it's microscopic, that over time, all the microscopic consequences add up to something big that might take a year in the making before you actually see the fruits of it. But believe me, there are consequences for negative actions. And profanity is one of those. I tell you, for example, raising your kids to speak profanely. I got a great example for you. This is a sweet kid that we went on vacation with. And I remember the kids playing in the pool together, and it was great. I saw him when I went on vacation a couple of weeks ago. The kid still looks the same, right? Like, still looks like this innocent looking kid. Mm-hmm. But now every other word out of his mouth is an F-bomb. He is, and I told you this before, like, one of the things that shocked me when I was in Vermont is that everyone cursed. Like, I couldn't escape it. And I say everyone, I'm exaggerating, but most people were cursing. They couldn't help it. And so here it is. Here's this kid now that in 6 or 7 years, he's transformed himself where he can't even speak. He can't even think without thrusting profanity in the midst of the conversation unnecessarily. And I know that it has an impact on his life. I believe that it has an impact on his life. And now, so that behavior, those negative behavior, those microscopic behavior from his dad and his dad's friends and maybe his mom, always using profanity, now fast forward, it's now turned into, now it's a vicious cycle. So now he's using profanity all the time. And I guarantee you that somehow, some way, it might have played a factor in how he's living his life today. But let's just fast forward that and say he continues doing that. He continues living his life that way. And I saw no indication based on the time I spent around him that he's going to change. That means he's going to probably marry into that. That means his kids are going to probably be born into that. And now that cycle is going to now be passed down another generation if something doesn't happen. And I'm telling you, imagine a whole neighborhood that's like that. And I saw that for myself in Vermont. But imagine a whole city that's like that. Imagine a whole county, a whole state. Do you understand how pervasive this is? Something as simple as words, before you know it, in a generation, the words have changed now, and now you have a profane country.
No, they're just words, man. What he's saying doesn't affect me. Unless you come to me and say, hey, F you, then that's a different story, but it's just words. His parents probably don't care because they do it. They see it. I cuss here all the time. I try not to, but it happens.
The very fact that you try not to, whether you realize
it or not. And when I try not to, it comes out even more.
I mean,
listen, I walk around the house with like Tourette syndrome, just yelling out random stuff. It is off the wall type thing.
There is something innate in you, something inside of you, whether you realize it or not, that knows that is wrong. Now, you might argue back, you might push back right now and say, Steve, you're out of your mind.
I'm not saying that it's wrong.
That is not, there's something in you, Billy, that whether you want to believe it or not, there's something in you when you curse or use profanity that says that this is wrong. And I know you're going to rail against that. You're going to push back on it. But I'm telling you, if you did not believe that there's something wrong, you would do it all the time.
No, before Liam was born, I'd said it all the time. Listen, I don't care about the profanity. I don't care about homework. Just, like, it's not a big deal. Okay? My kid's not doing work at home from school because the teacher's lazy. He does it there. He's not doing homework. He cusses, so be it. It's just words. Who cares? And as you get older, and I still feel that way about who cares. But he has to care. So he plays his video games. If I hear one of his friends yelling and cussing on there, well, you're not going to hang out with that kid. That kid could be awesome. But it also could be a boy being a boy when no one's around. But I take it, you know, what's my phrase here? Perception is reality. If I hear some kid yelling and screaming and cussing, I assume he's a bad little kid. But it could be a boy being a boy.
But listen to what you just said. You're making an assumption about a kid who's using profanity.
Yes.
This is on your own. This is your own prejudices that are saying
it's not a prejudice because I don't know the kid.
I'm not even saying
being told all the time profanity's bad.
Really, you're making my argument for me. I'm not even using prejudice in this sense as a negative. I'm saying that already within you, you know that I shouldn't be hearing this from a child, right? So, again, it goes back to my point. There's something that's not right about it. There's something that's inherently wrong about it. And look,
it's only wrong because we're told it's wrong.
I'll take it. But you know who told us it's wrong?
No, I don't.
God.
I don't think he did.
Yes, he did.
I think he has other things to worry about than how people talk.
But that's the issue. That is the issue. That people take God as this distant person. You know, like, he's got his mind. He's such a little God. He's such a minute figure that he cannot possibly be concerned with whether we curse or not, because he's got so much going on. And my question to you, or my rebuttal to that, is like, hold on a second. If there's a God, right, which you know how I feel about this, right?
Yeah.
But if there's a God that could build this universe, that can take all this disorder and actually make it a symphony, is there really a limit to what he can do? Is there really a limit in what, if he says that I am concerned with a grain of salt, is that really something that he can't do? Are we putting the restrictions on him? Because what I'm saying to you is that no, my rhetorical response to that is that no, there is no limit. If he could take this disorder and make it a symphony, then there's nothing that he can't do. And if he cares about how we speak, then he cares about how we speak. I'm not going to say that he's so big and he's got so much going on that he doesn't care about how we speak. That's the idea of this distant God, someone who doesn't know us, who only is concerned for us on a micro level, on a macro level in terms of, let's say, human race, but not Billy specifically. And what I'm saying to you is like, no, the God, the Christian God, is a very relational God. He cares about Billy specifically. He cares about Steve specifically. In fact, Steve and Billy could be speaking to him at the same time, and he can be carrying a conversation on with us individually without batting an eyelash, without even, oh, what did you say, Billy? Of course not, because he's that big. And he's the one that sets the morality. He's the standard of morality. And he's saying, like, you're my people, you're my children. Just like you don't want Liam to curse, he's saying, his children, I don't want you to curse.
I don't mind if Liam curses. My concern is how other people perceive him. He can say what he wants. I'm instilling it in people that are going to judge you. And I use an example of his friends. I saw his kid text this X, Y, and Z. I don't know this kid. I'm seeing the words next to his name. I'm assuming this kid is a punk. He could be a great kid, but he could be doing boys are boys type stuff. You know what I mean? So I tell Liam, listen, just FYI, these people don't know you. If they walk into the room and hear you yelling and screaming and calling some kid an idiot, you suck, you're the worst, they're going to think you're a jerk. You're not a jerk, but in this moment you are, and that's how they're going to perceive you to be. So be aware of that. There are consequences for what you say. That's how I look at it. But when I work with kids, if you're going to cuss, cuss. Don't cuss at someone. That's when you're going to get in trouble.
Billy, what amazes me is that you don't see the incongruousness of this argument.
No, I see. I understand what you're saying. Life ebbs and flows. I know what I'm saying. I know what I feel. I know it's going to change. And that's not a big deal. At the end of the day, my kid has to know people are going to judge him, whether it's true or not, whether it's off words or not.
But here's what I'm saying.
And you have to not really care.
Here's what I'm saying. And I realize that. I see that you like diverted away from the DD conversation when you went back to I don't care if Liam curses, because I'm taking it to a higher level, and I'm saying like this is the starting point. Everything trickles down from that. But if I'm saying this, it's at face value. But if I take it to where you are, right, on this level, what I'm saying to you is that you recognize that there's a judgment that happens.
Yeah.
Based on him using profanity. Yes. Right? There's a judgment.
And up until a certain age, my job is to protect him.
But that judgment doesn't stop, right?
Well, who cares?
Well, no, you do care.
Now, you, as a kid, when he's going to make his own decision, say what you want.
You can say what you want, but let me ask you a different way. If you knew that Liam grows up to be an adult that uses profanity at will and that it has an adverse effect on him, would that upset you? Would that bother you?
No, he made his choice.
No, it would bother you.
No, it wouldn't. You can't ask someone a question and tell them the answer. It wouldn't.
Listen, I'm saying...
Because one, I cuss at will, but I also know when to turn it off.
You know how to turn it off, but I say cuss at will. So that means that turning it off is... Knowing when to turn it off is not cussing at will. I'm saying like a person like the kid that...
Find me some guy named Will, I'm going to go cuss at him.
Find me... I don't think... And I've
listen, I've told you this a thousand times.
I've given you compliments on the show before when I told you that I love the way that you love your family. I love your family unit beyond your nucleus. Like it goes beyond you, right?
Family dinners and stuff like that.
Everything. I just love it. I envy it. I want to have that lifestyle when my kids get older. So the reason that I'm rejecting what you're saying is not because I just want to argue with you. I'm saying that there's something deeper here. And you know we don't have to agree. That's neighborly discourse where we'll talk about something and we're not going to agree. And this is clearly a place that we're not going to agree. But I know that you want your kids to be successful. And if your kids, if there's anything that your kids are doing, and I say kids, I'm not talking about because of their age right now, in life, if they're doing anything that can cause them not to be successful, I know that's going to bother you. And that,
we've had this conversation before.
I'm saying bother, it might be, let me frame it differently. Not bother in a sense where you're going to cry and lose sleep over it. That's not the kind of bother that I'm saying. I'm saying the kind of bother where you would want and hope and inspire for something more for your kids.
Yeah, I would want and hope and aspire for something more for my kids.
Aspire, excuse me.
I would want that, yes. I would hope that I did enough throughout their lives growing up, that when they were off on their own, they can make their own decisions. Part of me using profanity is my inability to control it at times. The other part of it is it's words, get over it. Another part is that, listen, you see me out talking with people, I laugh, I chuckle, I don't use profanity. When I'm home, I'm a different person. You have to be able to adapt. Everybody has on a different face when they go outside, no matter what they say. Can you adapt, or are you going to be the guy, to your point, yelling and cussing and screaming, looking like an idiot, and no one's going to take you seriously? Are you going to be able to make it through society? Society is cussing. Society is not. Society is believing God. Society is not. Can you roll with the punches? That's what I believe. That's how I make it through the day.
So
we had a conversation before you asked me. I might butcher it a bit.
Okay.
Would you rather your kids be successful because you're hard on them as a kid, or like you and be unsuccessful? You want your kids to like you and be unsuccessful. I could not care less if my kid likes me when he gets older, as long as he's successful. Because eventually I'll be gone. He's got to keep pushing.
Do you know why? Do you remember why I said?
No, I don't.
Okay. Because I said that I am the embodiment or the physical manifestation of God on earth.
Okay.
We're
talking about relationships, I think
we're talking about relationships, right. Because the God that I'm a Christian, and Christianity believes in a relational God, right? Where God, I said it a few minutes ago, where he's not absent. He's there and present, and he wants to know you as a person. He wants you to know him as a person. And so if I represent God to my children, I represent that dynamic, that father dynamic, and I screw it up inadvertently, unwittingly, or even maybe directly, I'm going to have an impact on how my kids view God. Okay. And to me, the greatest success in life is not financial success, is not worldly esteem, right? That's not the greatest success at all. To me, the greatest success is having a relationship with God. Because without that, because we're all going to die. I don't care if we live, if they kill you in the womb, I don't care if you die at 100 years old, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
And when that happens, we're going to come face to face with the God of the universe, the one who created everything. And God forbid the first time you meet him is at that moment. So my ultimate goal, my responsibility in life, once I became a parent, is to make sure that the first time my kids meet my dad, or yes, my dad and their dad, but meet God, is not when they die.
I view success as success.
And that's a sec- that that I would expect that from a secular worldview, for but sure.
It's also, but, it's true though. Success is success.
Let me give you an idea to consider.
Okay.
In terms of profanity and how microaggressions like profanity, how they can lead to something terrible in the future, right? I'm going to go off subject. I'm not going to talk about profanity anymore. I'm going to use a different example.
Okay.
I told you this on Saturday. So, you know, I'm a youth pastor, right?
Yeah.
I run a youth group. My wife and I run a youth group. We've been doing it for 5 years. I noticed in the last few weeks or a couple of months that there's this heaviness that I can see when the kids come in. Like, I broke this down to you before.
Yeah.
When you first come into our youth on a Friday night, it's just, you know, let your hair down.
Yeah.
We call it chill time. We have different kiosks set up where you can play different games. You know, we hang out, fellowship. We got a snack shack. I mean, it's just, let's just have fun. There's laughter going on and the whole nine running around and whatever. But I see this heaviness in these kids who come in now. Like, they're not as carefree. And it got to me. And so I started having conversations. So I actually had a conversation or teaching. This wasn't my goal, but I actually taught on this on Friday. And I asked them, are they scared? And they all said yes. They are concerned. They're anxious when they're around other people. They're anxious about life. You know, there's a little bit of depression seeping in. And why is that? And guys, hear me, okay? I do not want to turn this conversation, and so Billy, I'm asking you to help me with this. I'm not trying to turn this conversation into a COVID conversation. I'm not trying to turn this conversation into a vaccinated, don't get vaccinated conversation. That's not where I'm going with this. Where I'm going with this is to show you how microaggression can lead to something that is devastating and demonstrably negative in the short term, if not long term.
Okay.
So right now, my kids that I deal with between 12 and 18, almost all of them, and it just so happens that on this Friday, I had no one over 16. So I had 12 to 16-year-olds that I was meeting with. No one could remember life before January 2020. They are so consumed with this COVID thing that is happening that their whole mindset is COVID, 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 wear mask, you know, keep your distance, don't engage with your friends. This is all they can remember. And they're teenagers.
Yeah.
They're teenagers and they feel this way where they cannot remember just a year ago, right?
Yeah.
So give it another 4 or 5 years of this and we have created a generation of people who are scared, who live their lives scared, who live their lives ready to capitulate to whatever the government says at a drop of a hat.
Well, that's what they're trying to do.
Well, okay, let's just say that's what they're trying to do. That's not even nuanced, but I don't even want to go there. I just want you guys to consider that for
All
a
right.
second.
Also, I fully agree with you. Now, going off micro, I look at it, everything is different. Not everything is this broad spectrum. Profanity and fear-mongering are different things. Though I understand what you're trying to say.
Right.
I fully get it.
Okay.
That, to me, based on what you specifically just said, that's at home. If you're scared at home, your kids are going to be scared at home. Now, I get it. They may not remember January 2020.
Right.
But we don't wear masks around here. We went cleat shopping yesterday. I had the gator around my neck, so did Liam.
Did you have it on your face?
No.
Okay.
I didn't put it on. He put his on. So I looked down and said, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's
he
interesting.
He said, well, you know, the sign says it's recommended. I said, all right. So recommended means you don't have to. He goes, no, I'll put it on. Okay, cool, no problem. So we come out. I go, now we're outside. Now take your mask off. Now it will tell you to take it off. You look ridiculous. And he takes it off. I go, why do you wear it? I don't know. It's, you know, they say to wear it. Okay. But you know it does nothing. So I had a little conversation with him about it. Again, I let him make his own decisions depending on what it is. But I always am in his ear like, listen, yes, there is something serious out there. Yes, it's harmful to people. For kids, however, bro, you're pretty good. And I'm almost 100% he had it last March. I haven't gotten his antibodies yet.
Right.
But I'm almost 100% sure he had it last year.
Okay.
I'm like, listen, you're fine. I get being smart. So I take it from that because I want him to not feel, I'm going to sound like a, I don't know. I don't want him to feel like I'm picking on him for making a choice, because I always tell him, make your own choice. But I also want to our, what we're saying here, make your choice, but make it with information. Don't wear your mask because your teacher at school says to wear it. Don't wear your mask because the news says to wear it. Why are you wearing the mask? You're 12. You don't got that big of a world view. So you're taking what your teachers say, taking what your friends say, and you're going to take what your parents say. You know, so I'm making sure my voice is louder than all of them.
Right. So how do you think he received that? Because I have so much to say about this.
No, he still put, well, he took it off, but I've been asking about it. He's processing.
Okay.
But he does wear it. And not that we're afraid.
When you say we.
Family.
Your family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not that we're afraid, but where his mom works, dead people come in.
Right.
And she does, like, we have, you know, pillow talk, dinner conversation. It's not, oh, you know, this customer today, my colleague this. It's, hey, this guy died from this, and you should just, like, it's ridiculous talk that I don't want to talk about.
It's like your spouse is a detective where he sees dead bodies.
Yes, and it's not something I want to hear about.
Bloody crime scenes.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So some of the stuff comes through COVID-related, and it's a real thing. So she's extra amped up.
In what sense?
You mean? In that people don't just die. Like, I've never understood this. Did he die painful or die peaceful? You're dead. I don't think it makes a difference. Okay? You're dead. I never understood that.
Okay.
But she's like, it is like it guts you when you die of COVID in certain aspects. And it's the aspects of these people are unhealthy. That's where it comes from. You know, it's bad, but it's extra bad because she sees the pictures.
So I'm trying to understand the picture that you're painting for me, because I want to know where should I comment or where should I I'm trying to understand.
It's not just us listening to the news like, hey, people are dying. She sees it. She reads the reports. She knows, is someone dying from COVID or is it a fabricated tale by the media?
Okay.
So what comes home is you got to be prepared because she's scared.
You got to be prepared for...
For anything, because COVID is real. It's not this make-believe thing the news is talking about.
Right, but you and I don't believe that's make-believe, right?
No, we don't.
Okay, but by my own admission, because you know I got sick, right? I got deathly sick, so I know that it's real.
Yeah.
But just because I know that it's real and that I can get it, I'm not scared of it.
No, but you have no problem dying. Most people concern themselves with that.
So there is the problem.
It's not a problem.
Is it? Is it not?
Yes, it's not a problem. People don't want to die.
Okay, hold on a second. There's like two major issues here.
No, right? That's not an issue.
No, there is. There is. There's two major issues, and let me just frame it for you. One of them is the reality that you're going to die from getting COVID.
No.
That's issue number one. Because the numbers...
Not you're going to die from it.
But
you can die because of it. It's not going to kill you if you get it. But those who die from it, it's a grisly death.
Well, hold on. That's fine. Those who die from a car accident with a gun
driver... Yeah, they've got it 100 times worse.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just saying, death is death, like you said.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making to you is, to be scared of dying, right? Okay, fine. Let's say that's innate. That's something that's natural, right? But we get into a moving missile every day and go to and from work where...
Oh, I had this conversation with a teacher when I was in the 10th grade.
You know,
talking about cars and this, that, and the other, about not wearing seatbelts. You could die not wearing your seatbelt. I could rock back in my chair, hit my head in the desk behind me and die.
Okay,
like,
so...
things are going to happen.
But right, I understand. But see, rocking back in your chair, right, that's like... an anomaly, right?
Yeah.
That we can say that on the bell curve, they're going to be outliers, right? But I'm talking about literally driving in a car. You can go get some information right now and know how many people die every year from car accidents, okay? So you're not scared to get into your car, right? When you have a great likelihood of dying in a car accident. And I say great, but I'm saying compared
all
to
right,
COVID.
So here's, I get what you're saying. And no, it's not afraid to die in your car. But every time I get in the car with Liam, I tell him, listen, make sure I don't get on my phone. Because I can be absent-minded. I'm the adult. I think I'm good. I can text and drive and knee, spin the wheel and all this crap. No.
Right.
You got to be 100%. Because you are responsible for you. Nobody else. The person out there, they're the idiot. So at any given time, your best option of car survival and accident or driving is only 50%. They're watching their phone, 0% attention. You're 100%, no phone, no radio, you're driving, two hands on the wheel, 10 and 2, hovering the brake, you're doing everything right. When they screw up, you have a 50-50 shot of coming out alive, no matter how perfect you are. So make sure you were always on point, because other people are going to screw it up for you.
So relate that to this whole COVID thing. Relate what you just said to this COVID conversation.
Well, you're talking about getting in a car and being afraid to die. Right. You know, we drive because we have to. You have to be responsible for yourself. So going back to him with his mask, I'm telling him, you don't have to wear a mask. It's ridiculous. It's not that big of a deal. But he's taking responsibility for himself by wearing it. I'm not going to get on about that.
Okay, so this...
When his mom comes home and says, listen, so-and-so died, this person died, I saw this. It is what we think. It is some random anomaly, but it's someone still died, and it is contributed to COVID. So you're responsible for yourself to take the proper precaution.
Okay, so this is... Look, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. I want to make it clear that...
No, I totally understand what you're asking to bring it back. So again, it's... We talked earlier with the profanity and the kids with the dishes. My job is to teach him to handle himself. And if you feel, no matter how I feel the mask is ridiculous or not, you're taking precaution. And if that's what you're asking, if that's what I'm asking you to do, I'm not going to get upset. Though I don't agree with it, hey, I've always told you, you've got to do what's best for you, and you're doing it. Hey, what? Good job, bro. I think it's silly, but I'm not going to belittle him for doing it.
Okay, so...
I'm going to give him information about what we read, research.
That last point you made
is
salient. I want to make sure that we highlight that, which is that we can disagree, right? Like, you and I just disagree on profanity, right?
Yeah.
But we're still talking, right? And this is not made up. We're still talking. We're not upset at each other. We just don't agree when it comes to profanity. So your son could not agree, or our kids could not agree and say they want to wear masks.
Yeah.
And we might not agree with them, but we're not going to make them feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Okay? And... that needs to extend through every conversation in this world for the most part, right?
Don't come and get mad at me for not wearing one. I'm responsible for me.
So I want to make sure we highlight that and make sure that it's crystal clear. Okay. But now I want to turn and go back to the microaggression.
Okay.
Because even though I agree with everything you just said, that we can't make him feel bad about it, we have an obligation to make him understand. Let me develop this, because I know you might want to push back, but let me develop this for a second. We have an obligation to make him understand that whether he realizes it or not, he is being transformed into something that he may not have been transformed into if not for this propaganda machine that is happening right before our eyes. And if you're listening, you're going to say, oh my goodness, there he goes again, talking about propaganda machine. And COVID is real. People are dying. Yes, I know COVID is real. Yes, I know people are dying. But I need you to understand, know your history. Know the type of diseases and the type of mortality causes that exist in the world. Do the math. Do the numbers. We have a vaccine right now that we didn't have a year ago. We have other vaccines. We got booster shots. We have natural immunity. There are other remedies that are out there. What do they call it? Therapeutics that are out there that we didn't have a year ago. What I'm trying to explain is that the world, for some reason, the world, and when I say the world, I'm talking about it from a hierarchy perspective. The people at the top are pushing down on us this information, almost like one voice saying one theme, and we are not able to move away. We can't escape it. It's like smoke filling up a room, and no matter what corner of the room we go to, we're still inhaling the smoke that ultimately is going to kill us. And I'm saying to the listeners right now, I'm saying to you, Billy, right now, that I'm concerned that this whole COVID quote-unquote pandemic is that smoke in the room. And if we don't wake up and start opening up some windows and open up the door and the garage door, you know, and start getting some circulation, start blowing the fan, we're going to get consumed by the smoke. And Liam and all our kids have absolutely nothing to worry about. And again, you may say, oh, there you go again, using words like absolute. Of course, guys, I believe in the bell curve. I believe that there are going to be kids who die. In fact, I know there are kids who die.
Listen to our last episode. Exactly. The last thing we fact-checked, actual fact-check with multiple sites, peer review, whichever you want to look into.
CDC.
Around 500 kids in the country or the world?
The country.
All right, so 500. I mean, my kid goes to school. He's in middle school. There's like 1,700 middle school kids. So that's not counting fifth grade and under, ninth grade and up. That's just sixth, seventh, and eighth. There's about 1,700 kids, and we're talking 500 for the country.
Exactly.
And we're not trying to belittle anybody, but odds are, it's, you know, neighborhoods that can't get vaccines, even though there's free stuff. It's people who are questioning the government based on their craziness. So when we say 500 kids. Yes, we understand one kid is one kid too much.
I want to jump on that. You said one kid is one kid too much. We don't say that about the 3,000 kids who died from a car accident.
No.
No one's talking about we don't put kids in cars anymore. That doesn't even come up in a conversation. We're not saying, hey, get rid of cars, right? We still have school buses. But yet almost 3,000 kids, if not more, died last year. Than the 500 compared to the 500, less than 500 who died from COVID since the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Do you understand that? And so what I'm saying to you is, if you understand that and you really believe that, just the dichotomy of what I just said, how many kids died from auto accidents compared to COVID? If you really believe what I said to you, and then you turn and say, okay, well, how do I react to my kid getting in a car? Versus how do I act to COVID? And you see that there's a wide gap in your behavior from how you respond to COVID versus you're kicking in the car, then you understand you're inhaling the smoke. You are absolutely inhaling the smoke.
And that goes back to what I said earlier, you're responsible at home. So he makes a decision, he wears his mask, I'm going to be the voice at home because he's going to hear. People have to realize, and we talk people, not politics on this show, TV, predominantly liberal. Education, government, liberal.
Newspapers,
liberal. Everything is predominantly liberal.
Did you say entertainment?
Entertainment. Across the board. Right. I mean, not streaming, all of it. Anything predominantly in this country is liberal-based. If you at home are, and again, I'm not talking to Democrats or Republicans, because there's a lot of Democrats who are looking around at what's going on in the country and like, man, I didn't sign up for this. I checked like 3 boxes of what the Democrats wanted to do, not all 10 of these crazy things. So I'm talking to you guys as well. If you're not the voice of reason at home, your kids are being, everything out there is coming at them with this kind of agenda, the liberal agenda. Again, different than what Democrats want, different than what Republicans want. It's coming at them. Or we'll call it an elitist agenda. Let's put it that way. Because though it's, my opinion, more liberal, there's conservatives in there too. It's an elitist agenda.
I love the way you said that. I really love the way you said that. Elitist agenda.
It is because they're coming after the kids. So if you are not have a strong voice at home to say, listen, I understand what you're seeing in school. I understand what you're seeing on TV. Come home and talk to me. And if you, and here's what I struggle with. I sometimes bark at Liam. Hmm. I always say, hey, come talk to me. He says something and I go to 100. Well, I can't expect him to come talk to me if I'm flying off the handle every time he brings a concern to me.
Right.
So that's something I've got to learn from myself. But if you are not being a strong voice at home, your kids are going to be lost in the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's whether like Steve, it's religion first and you go for God first and you go from there. Me, it's accountability. It could be one of the same depending on who you talk to. Point is you've got to instill it at home so your kids are safe when they go outside that front door because outside it's crazy.
Right. And so just cleaning this up a little bit just to make sure that we tighten it up and make sure that everyone understands where we're coming from. The issue that took us down this track was microaggressions, right?
Yes.
And I was just using the COVID hysteria that we're under right now as an example of how...
The long game. The long game. Your kids that you work with, your youth group, they can't remember what life was before January 2020.
Right.
I imagine a lot of those kids have Instagram, and I imagine a lot of them are dressed up, hair done, nice clothes, with a mask on their face.
Right.
Like, that's...
In fact, I can think of someone very specifically right now who, you know... She came in looking really nice. I did not see her face the entire time that she was there.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not here to get on someone for wearing the mask, but just research a little bit. I put something out on the poll of the day comments the other day. It was about mask mandates and are they helpful? And I replied, these germs are spread within 2 feet, not 6 feet.
Right.
So if you're within 2 feet, it's getting into your eyes. One guy railed against me. You can confuse germs with virus. It spreads 10 feet. I'm like, no, honestly, like, I get it. A virus is bad, but it is a germ. I'm not a scientist. Look it up. But it starts from germs.
Right.
And if you're 5 feet away from me, if you're 2.5 feet away from me, I'm going to be okay. Mask or no mask. If you're within 2 feet of me, mask or no mask, I'm going to get sick based on how germs flow. They're going to get into your eyes. So in my opinion, the mask isn't helpful because inside of 2 feet, it's getting to my eyes and I'm going to get sick.
I'll take that argument and just push that envelope just a little further. Based on the numbers, do you want to live in a world like that? Like, are you okay? Are you okay with the rest of your life? We're going to have to be 6 feet away from each other. We're going to have to wear masks. Are you okay with that? Because I'm telling you that I put my life on the line. I am not okay with that. I do not. Look, again.
But again, is it putting your life on the line by not wearing a mask?
Well, again. So, you know what I mean? There's so many.
But I get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, but think about that. People, you're putting your life on the line for not wearing a microscopic cover across your face. And don't give me the N95s and all. Look around. Nobody has those, okay? Be realistic. Be realistic. People are putting anything over their face. Bandanas, T-shirts.
Which is absolutely no protection.
Which was originally put out, just put anything on your face. Cloth, that doesn't matter. All this crazy stuff back, you know, a year or so ago. A little food for thought. Everything we were told growing up about eating right, exercising, taking your vitamins, all goes out the window when it comes to COVID. It's stay inside and wear a mask. Just think about that.
The people who are not sick, quarantine.
Yeah.
Right? You who are not sick, stay inside.
And this isn't anti-vaccine. This isn't anti-COVID. This isn't anti-whatever. This is just things you were always taught growing up. Be healthy, eat right, exercise, take your vitamins. It'll keep you from getting sick.
Right.
And now when it comes to a virus that gets you sick, it's stay inside. Don't do anything. Don't talk to anybody. Don't touch anybody. All of a sudden, it's gone.
So here's something that I want to throw out there, just as a little bit off subject, but still on subject. Do you know who the predominant demographic that is refusing to take the COVID shot? Do you know what?
I do.
What demographic is that?
Well, they call it black and brown people.
Black and brown people. So I want to let that marinate for a second. You may not know this, and I apologize. Next time, I will get the exact official number for you. But the half of the country who has not taken, the half of the country that have not taken the vaccine, the majority of that number are made up of, quote unquote, people of color. And really, if you're going to be honest and very specific, the majority of the majority are blacks. Okay? Now, Billy. Do you know what percentage of blacks voted for Biden?
I would say 90 to 95%.
You're in the right ballpark, somewhere around 88 to 92%. Okay. In that realm, the black population has voted Democrat as a Democratic bloc for in the 90th percentile. I'm talking about. We're talking since the mid-70s. Okay, probably. Since Nixon moving forward, they voted in a block and larger numbers since that time. Billy, I'm going to throw this at you. I would like to try to create a segment for what I'm about to do right now.
Okay.
And that is this. I want to challenge what you believe. You say that you are a Democrat and that you vote for the Democratic Party. Now, listen to me. I'm not saying this because I'm going against Democrats right now. That's not it. I just want to challenge what you believe. I want to challenge your thinking for a second. The very group of people that you align yourself with and say, this is who I vote for. They believe in what I believe in. I support their causes. And right now, I'm specifically speaking to the black people, the people of color that listen to this, that vote and lean Democratic. Your party is telling you we are going to force you to do something that you don't want to do. Let that marinate for a second. By the numbers already show it, you don't want the vaccine. You reject the vaccine. And there's different reasons why you reject it. And I'm not even going to get into those reasons. And I'm not going to even tell you whether I agree with you or not. But what I do understand is that the numbers already play it out that you are rejecting this vaccine. But yet, if you listen to popular media, or more specifically, if you listen to, popular media and our politicians, they will have you think that Republicans, that it's the Republicans who are saying, and the white supremacists who are railing against the vaccine, when the numbers already play it out, that is really the minorities who are against the vaccine, who do not want to have it. And so I'm speaking to you minorities and saying, these are the people that you elected, who are putting mandates out there, who are saying that if you work for a company that has more than 100 employees, you're going to have to get the vaccine, who are saying that your kids have to wear masks, who are saying everything under the sun, trying to push this agenda. These are the people that you put in office. And so I'm asking you, I'm challenging you to connect the dots. I heard Larry Elder say this one time when, because he's running for governor. He's a black man who's running for governor in California. If he gets elected, he'll be the first black governor of California. The biggest, 40 million people live in California and one of the oldest states in the union. And he would be the first black governor. As liberal as can be, and yet he's the first.
And didn't they call him a white supremacist?
They call him a white supremacist. There is no one jumping on the bandwagon of this black politician who would be the first in this liberal, who's all about wokeness, who's all about all this stuff, but no one is championing the fact that he's the first. Here's this black man who's the first. No. They're calling him a white supremacist. Anyway, when he was running for office, he got interviewed and he's telling stories. He was recounting stories that he was hearing from Democrats who are fed up with Newsom. And the interviewer asked him, "Hey, Larry, do these guys understand? Do these guys understand that they're the ones who voted Newsom into office?" And he said, and this is a question that we always have, like, why do you guys continue to vote for policies that you don't agree with? But Larry responded and he said, "You know that the average Joe doesn't connect the dot, that all they care about is putting food on their plate and taking care of their kids, you know, and being able to veg out for a couple of hours before they have to do it all over again the next day. So they really don't understand the macro issues and the policies." And so what I'm trying to do, this is Larry speaking, what I'm trying to do is go out there and actually inform the people what's going on so that they can connect the dots. So that's what I'm doing right now. That's what we're doing right now. We're asking you, and we're helping you and showing you how to connect the dots. That right now, you're under fire. Some of you in your workplace are railing and pushing back against your HR department. And you know that you might lose your job. And you know that you might be forced at the end of the day because you want to take care of your family and you don't want to lose your job. You might be forced to take this vaccine. And you're not happy about it. You're ticked off about it. I want you to connect the dot and recognize the people who are forcing you to do this are the people that you vote for. And I want you to remember this. I want you to remember this. I'm challenging you to think about it and ask yourself, was that a good decision? And is that a good decision moving forward?
All right, so I'll leave you with this. I'm going to give you some of the mind state of some people. The question asked the other day, should 9/11 be a holiday? My response was this. America was attacked. We divide ourselves with labels, party, etc. Some justified, some not. We as Americans were attacked. That is what should be remembered. A reply that I got. We, hardly. Democrat wannabe tyrants use identity politics to divide us, period. Because of them, there is no we.
Wow.
So Steve and I have talked about we were kind of conservative, but for different ways. I don't think either one of us align ourselves with this person.
No, not at all.
So my reply was, that's a problem. There is more of we than them, and we have to find a way to beat them.
Right.
And the reply back was, you don't know what you're talking about.
Wow.
So this is someone that we've talked about before. We're not going to reach the far left liberals.
Right.
We're not going to reach the far right conservatives.
They're gone.
For the 70% of us who have a decent head in our shoulders, we can talk about that. This guy seems like a lost cause. It's crazy. So just think about that. This isn't a Democrat versus Republican thing. This is an American people thing. Are you happy with what's going on? And to Steve's last point, are you willing to connect the dots? And then if you do, and they are not what you want, are you strong enough to realize I was wrong?
Right. Can you pivot? Can you pivot?
Yeah, that's all we're asking. And if it makes sense to you, fine. But just think, and that's for everybody. Don't just blindly follow the R and the D next to somebody's name. Do your research. Arm yourself with knowledge.
It's good stuff, man. That's a good one.
It is good.
Got anything else?
No, I'll save it for next time.
Yeah. Listen, I had a notepad of stuff that I want to talk about. So next time, for sure.
All right.